During the Switch, Pivot, or Quit chat, we talk to women that have successfully navigated through some of the plot twist years of life and are eager to share their stories and what they've learned in the hopes of inspiring, teaching, or making even the slightest impact by candidly owning their truth. Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, a former sports entertainment publicist in New York City, turned traditionally published author with Simon & Schuster, who quit my old life to write a book, live in London for a bit, and explore my dreams to find my happiness and fulfillment. I'm here to help encourage and guide you through your plot twist years as your chief encourager and host of the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. On today's show, we have a Switch, Pivot, or Quit chat with Christina Tapasio of Jig Plus Saw. Christina is all too familiar with the early makings of the social media culture, having worked in marketing in the startup world as well as blogging. But recently, she made a huge transition, opening up the only female-owned and operated for women, members-only co-working space in Los Angeles. Christina is an unapologetic storyteller who follows her heart, and now she's supporting creatives and entrepreneurs through Jig Plus Saw, encouraging them to go for it, girl. Let's welcome Christina Tapasio to the show.
Hello, hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm excited to be here in a very metaphorical state.
Awesome, awesome, of course. Congratulations on the grand opening of Jig Plus Saw last month.
Thank you.
Yes, yes, very exciting time. So tell us a bit about Jig Plus Saw.
Yeah, so Jig Plus Saw was really an idea I had back when I was living in New York City. I would say now it's about 4 or 5, maybe more years ago. But it was really this idea that you can sit at a table and there could be 3 to 5 different businesses surrounding that table. And how awesome would it be if we all collaborated to get ahead quicker? Mm. And I didn't know what I wanted to do with that concept. But then when I, you know, moved to Los Angeles and I was working more specifically with women and kind of feeling my own deficit, I felt like I was never going to get ahead as far as my male counterparts were, at least. And how can I support other women who are like me? And I tested Jig Plus Saw back in May of 2016, where we did an event. It was all day. And the idea was that we would bring all of the elements I wanted in a live co-working space. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in a one-day event. And we saw over 80 women show up and stay all day and engaged with the programming that we provided. And I wanted to see that on an everyday basis. So quite recently, we got a space. We're located downtown at the Row, which is adjacent to the RIP American Apparel building. you know, we have 1,000 square feet to ourselves, which I think is
wow,
great. Mm-hmm. You know, it's small, but it's mighty, and we're going to grow. But we facilitate co-working, we facilitate events, and we facilitate business resource. So you as a member can receive financial, legal, PR, and marketing as part of your membership, as well as just in general co-working with other rad women.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Like for women who are out there searching for their tribe and looking to grow their network, this is like the perfect blend and mix of it all because it gives you resources and community at the same time. So that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So you come from the blogging world most recently with your blog, ProFresh Style. And so I'm just curious, how has running a blog compared to your new business venture of operating a co-working space?
How has a blog?
Or is there no comparison at all?
I would say this. I would say that ProFreshStyle was something I know I needed as an outlet back in 2008. And it started out as a fashion blog. So the intention was really to express myself through style and making friends in that market, which we did. I mean, mm-hmm. I did. And then, you know, probably in 2010, it really started to become a business, not for me, but for others. And I took this route of like, okay, well, I don't think I can succeed in that way because I wasn't as passionate to creating content on an everyday basis. But what I was really passionate about is how to create really cool brand deals for these influencers. So I went the marketing route and I started interning in San Francisco for a bunch of startups, learning about blogging and how brand deals work and what brands are looking for, and then moving to New York City. And this is when social media managers were becoming like a very like baseline, like, oh, that's a job now kind of thing. It's not an intern. So I took the first social media manager job at an agency in New York City called J-Walk, owned by Charlie Walk. He was, I believe, Capitol Records. Now he's Republic Records, so Beyonce, Ariana Grande, blah, blah, blah. Right. So it was really cool to work in that market and be able to work in social media and essentially make awesome campaigns for my friends to be a part of and make them money. So, you know, moving forward with Jigsaw, it was kind of that same concept of like, okay, you know, I know all these awesome women. What happens if we are all in one space and I can provide them with opportunity that they don't always have on an everyday basis, whether that's brand deals, freelance jobs, any resources that I have. And instead of that, making it from a very personal perspective, I turned it into a business. Instead of it being about ProFreshStyle is working with these people, it became about how do we make this a community focused on building one another up. Mm-hmm. So, I would say ProFreshStyle definitely had a hand in it, but I think it was more than anything a catapult into what my future could look like. It was like a phase in my life, and now it's not here anymore.
Yeah. Because you did do the formal announcement and sort of like the goodbye message to the ProFreshStyle audience and everything. So yeah, not here anymore. So do you feel like everything that you've done in your career with social media and all and blogging and everything up until this point helped to prepare you for this journey?
No, I don't think the blog prepared me from a professional aspect. I think it mm-hmm. helped me learn how to speak to an audience. Mm-hmm. Because that was, I think, my differentiator is I spoke about very personal things on ProFreshStyle that really had nothing to do with style at all. It was breakups. It was, mm-hmm. you know, being let go of a job. It was
life.
Yeah, it was life. And I think mm-hmm. that there was, I learned how to be very receptive to other people and how they conduct their lives and how my stories can help them. And so I think from a more, you know, human interest perspective, like that was my way mm-hmm. to connect. But I don't think I would have done Jigsaw without my work experience. Mm-hmm. I took that route of like, okay, I'm going to be a quote unquote career professional and work my way up the marketing ladder, which I did. My last job, I was head of digital, and it's rewarding, I think, to have that aspect, being able to be a part of a startup, watch it grow and do that over and over again for multiple companies. I liked that concept. So I think not only having done that for others, but also taking little bits and pieces and utilizing that in my business, I think I wouldn't have been able to do Jigsaw without my work experience for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Everything, all things considered, it's like, you know, we always think that we're going to go one way and that our lives will take one route. But, you know, when you look back on everything that you've done, it's like it probably wasn't a coincidence to get you to the point where you're at now, you know, and everything mm-hmm. you do. Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. So prior to embarking on the journey of opening J Plus Law, did you have any hesitation or any fear about it?
I'm still very much living in fear. Yeah. But I don't let it, and before I used to let it run me, but now mm-hmm. I make myself aware of it. But it is scary because it's not like, a lot of my counterparts who have done this, it's not like I have, just money. It's not like I have, a true resource when it comes to investment. So it is just me. And I think that in itself is very scary. I'm responsible yeah. for two other people's lives. Well, really just monetarily, but you know, like I'm responsible for a team. I'm responsible to show up. I'm responsible to listen to the business as it forms. And I think that that's a very scary thing, being kind of just a single owner of a business. And I think that's also why a lot of women in particular go into business together, because it feels like a team. But that's also scary because, you know, what if someone else isn't fully committed? And, you know, that was a big fear for me, is taking on a partner. I didn't want to ever feel like I would only have a half committed partner. So, so to do it on my own is very scary, but to have a physical space is even scarier, because I'm responsible for people to work there. I'm responsible for us to be supplied with the things that we offer on a daily basis. So, yeah, it's absolutely scary.
Yeah. And I'm sure there was a lot that you had to learn too, that you probably didn't even think about or know, when you talk about like a physical space, and you've worked in the startup industry, and it's like, as an employee, it's one thing, but as an employer and a creator and an owner, it's a different thing. All the different sides of the business that you have to work with, I'm sure. And I'm sure you were introduced to a lot of new things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think just in general, like building a business, like you're never fully aware of all of the things that happen.
Yeah.
I think you want to be like, you read all the books and you take all the notes and you feel like you're prepared, but you're never prepared for the day that no one shows up, or the day that money is not arriving on time, or, you know, all of those things that just happen. I think it is a learn as you go kind of process.
Right. Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, and speaking of learning as you go, what was the first thing that you did proactively to put yourself or your business out there into the world when you were like feeling like, okay, I need people to know about this. I need people to consume this and hear about it.
What was I feeling, or how did I do it?
No, what was the first thing that you did? Like, you know, especially coming from a marketing background and having sort of like that that understanding of things, what was the first thing that you did to sort of say, okay, this is how I'm going to make the mark or start making the mark?
Right. Well, I quit my job, first and foremost. But I also quit something that wasn't fulfilling me, and more than anything, I think damaging me. Mm-hmm. And so that was like a first step to feel free.
Yeah.
But you know, I think the first step was really to start talking about it. I made my first investor deck. I started to position what full scale J Plus Law looked like. Mm. And then I started to just talk about it. And I listened to a really good podcast about, you know, you can't just live in fear that someone will take the idea, because
absolutely
at the end of the day, you know, if they take your idea and that was like the original idea, it was never your idea to begin with.
Yeah.
And I watched that happen. Like, I think I started talking about it to everybody I could, anybody I was meeting. It didn't matter who, whether it was the lady doing my nails or the guy at the bank, like it didn't matter. I was just talking about it, and no one cared also. But, you know, or I was talking about it at networking events or parties or what have you. And then I started to see a lot of my, I guess you wouldn't call them quote unquote competitors, but I don't personally think of it like that. But, you know, I saw them adding things in that I had planned for Jigplessaw, you know, when we launched. And so what that told me was I was on the right path, that I knew what I was talking about. And it was okay that that was being ingrained into other co-working spaces, because how awesome is that, that they are seeing something that there's a need for it, and then they have the resource to execute. And I also believe that there is a niche for everyone and everyone serves a purpose. So if there are other co-working spaces that do utilize the same services or the same kind of mindset that we do, like that's no hindrance to our actual business. It just means that we're on the right track. So I don't know if I went on a long-winded answer.
No, I love it. I absolutely love everything you said, because, you know, it's like, okay, what's the first step to putting yourself out there with your business? Well, your first step was quitting. Your first step was making a deck and seeing what the scale of the business could look like.
Right.
And that's important. And those are the things that sometimes people fail to plan for or don't look at or don't realize that they need to do until they've already, you know, gotten in a little too deep, and then they're realizing some of the, you know, realities are going to smack them in the face. So I can appreciate that for sure. I wanted to know, and I think you sort of touched on it, but, you know, with this current climate, like this entrepreneurial climate, and, you know, we know that there's all these different co-working spaces. And like you said, the idea of a co-working space is not unfamiliar. Like, let's say maybe 10 years ago, it would have been.
And maybe
it would have been called something different, and it would have looked a little different. We wouldn't have called it a co-working space, but now we're familiar with it. So, you know, what was the pull for you that caused you to want to open a co-working space specifically for women?
Right. Well, really, it was, I had this idea long ago before there was any other co-working spaces besides WeWork. And there was no way, at least in my mind, there was no way at 23 I would have been able to execute on it. I think I wanted to be able to get more work experience behind me to be able to talk about a business, period, that was mine. And so I think, you know, I think it was important once we were able to, once I was able to execute on or fully dedicate myself to a project, I think it was important for me to focus on what I needed, because I was going to be, no matter what, pro fresh style, whatever, I was always the root of my solve. And I looked at it like, I felt, especially in Los Angeles, you feel very isolated, because you don't look the same as everybody else. You don't act the same as everybody else. You didn't come from the same wealth as everybody else. And that it is all a perception. I'm very clear on that. But my perception was that I was not accepted. And so what can I do to make people, or to have women feel accepted, and feel like they're heard and feel like they have support? And I had gone to many events where it was women centric and still felt like it was a, well, what do you do? Well, who are you working with? Well, what's your social following? Well, don't forget to tag me.
Yeah.
And that's just not the environment I want to instill, which is, you know, strategically why we're not really boasting a bunch of influence through Jigplessaw. Although we love that. We love that we have supportive friends. We're not looking to reach, you know, 10,000 followers on Instagram. Like, that's not the motive. So for us, it's about supporting the women who have 500 and like, how can we talk about, you know, growth and talk about money and talk about mental health and talk about, partnerships and talk about all these things that I think we don't feel comfortable talking to a room full of women otherwise without fear of judgment. So to go to another long-winded response
that I love,
I really wanted to create a space for women that felt safe and secure for them to get shit done, period. but to also feel like they could speak about the things that they were working on without fear. Mm-hmm. And so if that came in the form of co-working, if that came in the form of events, if that came in the form of weekly meetings, I didn't really care. I just cared that there was a safe space to do so. And a space that also didn't feel like it was meant for one person. And what I mean by that is I felt like, you know, if you've ever walked into Soho House, as mm-hmm. great as it is, you feel like you don't belong. And obviously that's the creme de la creme. Like, that's not mm-hmm. obviously my audience. So it's very different. But I don't want people to feel like, well, I only made this specifically for a rich girl, mm-hmm. a white girl, mm-hmm. a black girl. A girl who already has a business just starting her second one, or a girl who's a blogger. Like, I want everyone to feel fully accepted in this space, and that you can absolutely work with each other to get shit done.
Mm-hmm. That right there is so key, and that needs to be like a video, because the selling point, you know, because it's like so many people at the core of it all, we want to belong. We want to feel accepted. We want to be acknowledged. We want to be recognized. And as cute and cool as it is to, you know, sometimes entertain some of these spaces and have these businesses and these opportunities that are out there that are exclusive, you know, it also brings in a feeling of I'm not good enough, too. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to feel like that. Everyone wants to feel included and surrounded and loved, too. You know, even if it's in the most generic form, sorry, but like love could just be, you know, someone smiling at you. You know, it doesn't have to be this intense, passionate thing, but it's like you want to feel accepted and you want to feel like good feelings and good vibes. And like you said, I know exactly what you mean. When you walk into a Soho House, you know, any Soho House property, there's a certain vibe that you get.
That's
and
right.
It's definitely, even though it's a members only type of thing, it's definitely not a vibe of inclusion, you know,
right.
Especially if you look a certain way or you don't fit the stereotypical mold. So I can absolutely appreciate a space and you creating a space like Jig Plus Saw, because we need it as women. We need it. And I was going to ask you next, why is women supporting women important to you? But I think you covered it. Like, it's pretty clear. We definitely need it. So when did you figure out your why? And your why could not even necessarily just mean in business, but your why in business life, just your why period. And if you could share your why with us, that'd be awesome too.
Well, I'm a very unsettled person, meaning I really feel like there is always something new to be done, which is a very hard thing for a business person. To feel swayed all the time. So, yeah. I would say that I haven't really quite, I mean, let me be fair to myself. I think I know the why. Mm-hmm. The why is working with women and being able to be a support system, but I don't know if I figured out why for myself. I think from a business perspective as Jig Plus Saw, I mean, why we do it is because why not? Why shouldn't there be a space for women to come get their shit done? I mean, when I was doing investment pitches, every investor I sat with or pitched to, their response was that it was an emotional choice to build a co-working space for women specifically, mm-hmm. and that it wasn't worth an investment because that's an emotional business transaction.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I think for me, that told me, first and foremost, I mean, look at today, like how many co-working spaces are there for women or social clubs or whatever you want to call them. Like there's so many now. And so that tells me that I already knew that it was going to be a success. I just luckily didn't work with those people, those investors. I think I know the why from a business perspective, but from a personal perspective, I still haven't figured out if I'm the vessel and that's mm-hmm. why I like it, or like what purpose do I serve? I think is also something I struggle with in the whole Jig Plus Saw mentality.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just, for me, I want to be able to feel fulfilled. And I think why I do that, do Jigsaw every day, is because I see other women being fulfilled. So it's like this transcendent, like, you're fulfilled, so am I, kind of thing, which I think is also something that's not perfect. Like, I think that needs to be worked on a bit, but I think it's a good baseline.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Cause I mean, we definitely have some crossover in that. It's like, you know, I just recently posted a video about, you know, sort of like how I came to being in this space and being the chief encourager at Life Accord in a Hurt. And a big part of it is because of what I felt was missing before. And like you said, just being able to be there for other women and be a supporter of them and an encourager of them, that fulfills me. And I know I don't have it all figured out yet, but I know that me sitting at my day job doing PR wasn't the move. Like, it wasn't fulfilling. You know, I didn't feel like, sometimes I didn't even feel like people appreciated the work that was being done, you know?
Absolutely.
So I know, at least in working with and encouraging women, there's an appreciation there. And sometimes that gives you more than all of the rest of this stuff combined can give you. So I think you're on the right path, for sure. For sure.
Well, thanks.
Now let's talk about this investment piece for a minute. Sure. You mentioned pitching to investors. Can you share with us a little bit of what that picture looked like? Because I know that there's a lot of women listening that that are aspiring entrepreneurs, or they have a side hustle. And sometimes we don't even know what that world looks like. So we don't even know, you know, sometimes some people don't even know what it takes to get a meeting with a potential investor, what types of questions, you know, you're prepared to answer when you go into meetings like this. So can you tell us a bit about what your process was like when you're like, okay, I need to start pitching investors? What did that look like for you?
Well, it was something that I think I was to this day, I still think I wasn't prepared for. And I had gone through, like, with the company I'd worked with prior, we had gone through two rounds of funding. I was part of the initial seed round, and I was able to comprehend language. And then two startups that I had worked for prior to that, I had also been a part of their Series A, which is a separate funding after your seed. So I felt personally like I was prepared. I knew what needed to be in the deck. I knew the questions that could be asked, but when you get in that room or you finally get their attention, you feel kerfuffled. You feel like you don't know what you're talking about, and they are very intimidating. And for me, I got mad at myself because as a woman, I should be able to stand up for myself. And I heard myself in a couple of the meetings, myself pivoting in the moment of like, oh, he doesn't like that. Cool, cool, cool. I'm going to switch it up and I'm going to say whatever it is that he wants. And it was a good moment for me to kind of take a step back and realize, one, you don't need the investment because you're not ready to take on the expectation. And two, I couldn't possibly want to have this person as a partner because they don't understand the vision of Jigsaw. So I think a couple of things when it comes to just, you know, for people who are listening, when it comes to starting the process of seeking investment, you have to know all of the questions up front. Like, Once you know, have this business and it's great, how will you make money? Because I think a lot of people were like, in our minds, like, well, we'll easily make money. You know, we'll have these memberships, we'll have these services, we'll provide this space, whatever it's going to be. But until you have tangible results from that, you are selling an idea. And for investors, if it's not product based, it's a very hard sell as a service. And that was one of my biggest takeaways, was I had all this idea, I had all of these ideas and it was all conceptual. And so for a person to invest $250,000 into a company, that's all hypothetical. I mean, talk about flighty, talk about scary, you know, like there's so many things that go into that. So what I kind of made clear to myself was that I had to be prepared to do a POC, a proof of concept. I need to be able to show, if I were to ever take investment, I had to have modeled this already with my own money, basically taking a risk. Because an investor needs to see that you as an entrepreneur can take the risk on your own. Whatever that looks like, it could be small, which is why we did our test in May and another test in July, and then obviously full scale this past February. So that wasn't one thing, is like knowing they're going to ask, like, how are you going to make money? And you need to be able to either have product results, like you've already tested this, you did a Kickstarter, whatever it's going to be, or you've already done the POC up front and here's the results from that.
Right.
So there's that. But the other thing is they want to be able to talk about what are the options for exit. And that was something that was really difficult for me, because I remember thinking, well, I don't want to sell my company, or I don't want so many people to own shares in this company, or I went through all of the thoughts, and which also was why it wasn't smart for me to even seek investment to begin with, because I wasn't prepared to have other people dictate what the business would look like.
Right.
And what I was really looking for when it came push to shove is I was looking for a strategic partner. So anyway, you have to be prepared for like what is going to happen for that investor to make his or her money back or get their worth out of it. And for me, I wasn't prepared for that because I wasn't really looking for an exit. I wasn't really looking to do that. So what that means is that you then have to pay out your investor. Usually it's on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis, but there has to be a way you pay them back, basically. Or you are paying them once you break even. So, you know,
and I would imagine that that's an easier thing to forecast, like you said, when you're talking about a business versus a service. I'm sorry, a product versus a service. Because a product, then you can say, okay, we have X amount of units at X amount of dollars. You know, you can sort of forecast it a bit better. And you can kind of give them an idea of like, okay, this is when you can walk away. But I can understand the emotional aspect for you saying, hey, well, what? We're just now talking about getting in bed together.
Right.
Walking away already? Like, what the
heck? Right.
Yeah. So there's a lot of learning that you seem to have gone through when you went through this process of pitching investors, right? Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
How would you describe life right now in one word if you had to?
Chaotic.
I love it. Chaotic. That's real. That is real. Because there's just so much going on, right?
Yeah. There's a lot to manage. I mean, for me, it's not just, you know, facilitating the space. It's being a partner to my boyfriend, being present for my friends and family, being aware that I have a dog that has to be walked and that I love to cook and I can't forget that. So I need to be able to make time for that. So I think, you know, I don't agree that we can have it all. I think that we can have it all, but things sacrifice. And I think we need to be okay with that. And that you can't obviously give your 100% to everything all at the same time. And I think it's unfair for us to even have that expectation on ourselves. So when I say chaotic, I mean that I'm struggling and working through that.
Right. Hey, aren't we all? It's like it's always something. So I absolutely get it. Now, you've lived in New York, Vancouver, and currently you're based in LA. So you're obviously no stranger to change.
Yeah.
What would you say is the number one key to embracing change in your mind?
Well, well, if we're talking about what I did, I don't think that's for everyone. I think if you are purposely changing yourself, I think that that is not for everyone. If there are changes happening in your life that you have to adjust to, I think that those are two very different things. For me, I purposely changed my life because when I was younger, I think I was just running from failure. And having landed in LA, I accept the failure now. So there really isn't, like, I haven't left Los Angeles, and we're going on 4 years, and that's probably the longest I've ever been anywhere. Besides where I'm from, which is the Bay Area, and I've obviously been there my whole right. youth. But I think there's that, right? So, like, owning up to, like, why you change, I think, is a big thing. But when you're having to embrace change from causes that are not your own, I think it's just so important to be aware of the change itself. Like, if you're, you know, God forbid, your parents pass away and you're left with heavy debt, that's not your choice. Mm-hmm. That was something that happened with the dynamic of your family. I think it's important to take it from a methodical step-by-step process of, like, okay, well, what does this look like? And how can I execute as a single person? And what are my options? Instead of allowing everything to overwhelm you and you feel like you're drowning and you can't handle it, because that's when your mental health kind of kicks in and you start falling into depression or feeling overwhelmed and you kind of dip out of life and pick up and move. Yeah. So I think it's kind of not allowing yourself to feel so buried, I think is really big. Mm-hmm. And just being present to the facts. Oh my God, the facts. Yeah. Something I'm currently going through is not allowing myself to tell myself a story of something. I have to listen to only the facts. And, like, for example, we're having a very hard time getting brand awareness for our new location because it is so hidden behind, like, two mega large buildings. Mm-hmm. And the address doesn't technically exist. It exists only as, like, a new Google Maps thing, but it doesn't really exist anywhere else. So the story I tell myself is, they don't like Dick Plessaw. They don't want this. They don't, you know, so you kind of tell yourself the story, but the facts are, if, you know, you look, is, hey, they can't find the place. Hey, they can't find the place at night because there's traffic. Like, whatever the facts are, like, those are the facts, and you can't build this story. So when change happens, you can't tell yourself, like, my parents passed away and they did this to me on purpose and now I have to suffer and they're dead and I can't even grieve because they're gone. And you tell yourself, like, this story. I mean, obviously that's a very dramatic scenario, but, you know,
I think we get it.
Yeah. I think it's just so important to be present. Even if it's like, I'll give another example, a silly example, but, like, if my boyfriend goes to the store and I have a very hard time allowing him to go to the store because I could do it better.
You're talking about, like, food shopping, like the grocery store?
Uh-huh.
I love it. Okay.
But you know, he's a gracious person and he loves to help. So, and who am I to stop him? So he'll offer to go pick up something and I give very specific instructions. For example, I asked him to pick up green olives yesterday and I sent him a picture of the green olive bottle. I told him, make sure that they're not in capitals, stuffed with cheese. And he comes home with still the wrong green olives.
Oh, no.
But you tell yourself this story of, like, he doesn't listen to me. He's so unintentional. He just does what he wants. He's, like, not even caring what I think or say. When really, he's just like, I just picked you up green olives because that's what you asked for. And they're not stuffed with cheese. And they're not, like, large is what you asked for.
Right. I checked all the boxes. Okay.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I think when change happens, and obviously they're very parallel, but when change happens, you do have to listen to, like, the facts of it so that you don't build yourself into this mega dramatic story.
Absolutely. I love that you talk about the story that you tell yourself versus the truth, the facts, and the reality, because we can all get caught up in that. I'm sure we can all run down a list of examples just day to day and how you do that. And I think that's something key to really take in, sit with for a minute, because you can, people listening, you can probably evaluate some situations in a different light when you look at it like that. So
absolutely.
So you've talked about you know, moving and whatnot to run from failures, but I want to know, what does success mean or look like for you?
Oh, man. I don't assess success.
Okay.
I'm really, it's a very hard thing because I will wrap myself in this like denial of like, okay, yeah, this is cool. But I could have done better. This could have looked better. I could have brought this to light, whatever it could have been, mm-hmm. Which is why I now have people on my team who get me out of that hole and allow me to see success.
But
I think it's just very hard for me to acknowledge what success can look like for myself.
Okay.
I still don't know how to do it. I don't. I think a lot of women really struggle with that too, of like,
mm-hmm.
we are taught not to be proud,
mm-hmm.
And we're taught to suppress. And I think I'm very much like that. And I do not recognize success as it stands for me. But I can easily access someone else's success and be so proud and so humbled by what they've created.
Yeah.
It's something that I think that I'm definitely still struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of like deprivation. Like I deprive myself from feeling that,
mm-hmm.
And I say this, but I don't even know if I got that would make me feel successful. But like one of my things on my like goal board is like, I would love to be on the cover of Forbes. Mm. And like, how epic would that be that, you know, my story is connecting women, all over the world. Like that's like a thing that I think I would love to have, but who knows? I might get that and be like, yeah, but you know, like I didn't do it globally. Like I didn't, like I can totally see myself spiraling into that. So, it's very hard. It's very hard to recognize success.
But I think sometimes that could just be a result of an ambitious person, an ambitious spirit, you know, and an attitude that doesn't include being complacent. So, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing to, you know, sort of feel like even if I achieve some of these things that I think would equate to success in my mind, I'll still want more. I'll still want to do more, achieve more. I don't really think that's bad. You know what I mean? I think it's realistic too, more than we know, because so many people that feel or that other people feel are successful and would say that those people are successful in their own mind, they may not even feel the success that you think that they should feel or would feel.
Sure. Yeah.
You know? So it's ongoing. It's a process probably for everyone. I'm sure if we did some kind of worldwide survey, the results would be like ridiculous about how many people actually don't feel like they've reached that success yet.
Absolutely.
It's different, you know, it's something that can continuously evolve as well. So when we're talking about success, and obviously we read about other people's successes and we, you know, a lot of us read self-help books and all these different things to get our minds right.
Right.
What has been the most helpful book that you've read during, you know, the course of your career thus far? Like at any point in time, something, a book that really stands out to you that you remember it making an impact on you?
You're going to ask me a tough question.
If you don't have one, it's fine.
Well, no, I do. I have a few. So I read The Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. And it's more of a personal venture. I guess it has nothing to do with Jigsaw necessarily, but I personally struggle with accessing creativity allowing myself to call myself a creative. So Big Magic really was about how to call yourself that and how to believe that you can be creative and what that means. And I think maybe inherently it helps me access that at Jigsaw. Like I designed the entire space and I felt very silly telling people that when they would come in and say, oh, wow, like who designed this space? It's incredible. Mm-hmm. I felt silly saying that I did it because I did it on a dime.
Girl. And, but it looks awesome, too. And you guys definitely need to go and check out the website if you're not in the L.A. area so that you can see it for yourself. And I really, really like the I'm going to call it an inspiration wall with the painted words.
Yeah.
About women. I really like that. So kudos to you, girl, please. You're a creative.
Well, so that actually, on a side note, that quote is something. So I was driving, heading downtown, and I needed to put in words, like, what I was feeling about Jigsaw. Like, what was it that I was doing this for? Mm-hmm. And I pulled over on the side of the road, and I wrote it in 10 minutes, and I got all of my feelings out. I wrote it in, like, my little red notebook thing. And after I was done, I like was speaking to my teammate and she connected me with the artist who eventually painted it instead of getting a decal.
Wow.
So it was like such a perfect story for us.
Yeah. It looks beautiful
there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
But it, you know, as far as other books, like, you know, I personally really loved, The Heart-Led Leader. It's a little bit more, there is tones of spirituality in the book, but mm-hmm. it really is about leading with your heart and remembering that the people that you have on your team are people and that they're not just pawns for your business to execute, that they are humans who have feelings and have problems and all of that, and how to be vulnerable to that and not allow your bossness to take over. So that was a really important read for me. You know what was also like pretty interesting? There's this book called 0 to 1, and it basically is like how to build a business. But the way I read it was that it made running a business more tangible than just like business for dummies. Like, I can't read things like that. I need to be able to read things that are easy to read. And it was just very comprehensible. And I think I took away a lot of epic things from that story. Oh, and Happiness. It's called Delivering Happiness. It's about why am I blanking now? It's a shoe company.
Zappos?
Zappos.
Okay.
So his story was pretty amazing and how he has to pivot. And that's like one of the things I believe in is when things don't work, you pivot the business. To me, like, that is the big thing about running a business is you have to allow it to be flexible and mold and change versus it is this way and it won't ever change and we're never going to be anything else. I think that that is an old school way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. And that's reality too. We have to pivot our lives sometimes too. That's what we're talking about here. Switch, pivot, and quit. Because sometimes when things aren't working in your lifestyle, in your personal life or your professional life, you have to pivot. You have to figure out, okay, what does the next step look like? What does my redirect look like? Because things don't always have to stay the same. They just don't. So I appreciate that for sure. So what's one thing that lets you know that you're living life on your terms and you're living a life according to her?
I think it's just being, you have to be ready for what you want to take on. So if you wanted to run a business, have a baby, get married, start a new hobby, you have to be ready for it. And for me, I was living on my own terms because I chose to quit. I chose to make those changes in order to have what I wanted. Mm-hmm. But until you're ready for that, you can't just say like, I give it all up and I'm gonna, you know, start this thing and then have instant regret. I think that's how you live on your terms is when you make the decision for yourself. Mm. You know, like people who are pressured to get married, they've been together for years. Like it's not okay to just get married because you've been pressured into it. And the same goes for starting a business. If you're not ready for it, there's no reason why you should quit your job and do it. I think it's more important that you try something and do it as a hobby. And if it turns into something, then absolutely quit and try full time. But I think you do have to be honest with yourself and, just be like fully ready to commit to whatever it is that you're wanting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for all of your insight and all of your wisdom that you share with us today.
Thank you. It was like so awesome to even just talk this out.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys don't want to miss out on all the goodness that Christina has cooking with Jig Plus Saw. So be sure to follow on Instagram at Jig Plus Saw, and that's spelled out Jig PLUSSAW, and stop by their website as well. Same thing, Jig Plus Saw, and to check out Christina on the day to day for the behind the scenes on her Instagram, you can go to Pro Fresh Style.
Yay!
If you're not already following us on Instagram, where we always play, be sure to get down with us at Life According to Her on IG. And don't miss out on our must reads over at lifeaccordingtoher.com. Thanks for hanging with us. And as always, keep killing it.